I just wanted to say thank you to everyone who's been listening to this podcast. Continue to share it with a lot of your friends. The numbers the last few weeks just continue to go up, which is really cool for me to see. Larry Kraskowiak sharing some of those NBA stories was really popular a few weeks ago. Tad Boyle, the head basketball coach at Colorado. Buffs fans really been checking in on that show, which was pretty cool to see. And then Corey Close and Steve Lavin last week talking about the legacy of John Wooden and some of the experiences they had with him. But today's episode is unique. It's a little different than what I normally do. It combines two of my passions, which is sports and wine. And for those of you who don't know, I tend to head up to Napa and Sonoma on some off days to get some prep done for the football season and basketball seasons now. And I do a lot of reading up there and obviously check out a lot of the different wineries. So today's guest, I think, is really the perfect intersection between two of my favorite things in wine and sports. And if you're looking for a holiday gift, I think there's nothing better than to give a bottle of wine. So I hope you enjoy today's episode.
Chris Paul is probably the biggest fan of wine. You can tell he really just loves it and is passionate about it. The first time Chris and I were drinking a glass of his wine at his fundraiser that he does in Vegas each year, you could just tell that there was that extra passion around the wine in the glass. But it is really one of those things where all of these guys, when their names on something, like, it's special to them, and they, yeah, and it needs to be, you know. And so I would say, from a pure wine knowledge standpoint, he's definitely up there.
To listen to your message, press one.
This is the Give Me a Sense podcast. Here's Mike Yale.
End of message.
Well, it's always exciting to talk about the sports world, the sports industry, and get stories from a lot of the athletes and coaches and broadcasters who have been on the show over the course of the last few months. And always appreciate you subscribing to the podcast, not to mention the feedback on Facebook, Mike Yam, or on Twitter, @Mike_Yam. But our next guest today on the show, I'm really excited to talk with him. We met months ago at AT&T Park at an event. I was emceeing it, and John Elway was on the panel. And I noticed when I was walking around the room that there were wine bottles, and they had, you know, basically John Elway's signature on it. And it was sort of not just, you know, a Sharpie on the label, but it was really like John Elway's wines. And I'm thinking to myself, like, what? I didn't realize that John Elway was part of this winery and what the deal was. Turns out I ended up meeting the CEO and the founder. Jay Cloberdans is with us, and he is the CEO and founder of One Hope Wine. And you can check out their website, onehopewine.com. And it is truly a remarkable story. I met with Jay. Jake, you and I, we spoke. I heard your story, and I think within 5 minutes, I said, hey, I'm starting up this podcast. I want you to come on. I'm thrilled to have you as a guest. So thank you so much for the time.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be on it.
Jake, so I guess we'll just start off by me asking you, what makes One Hope Wine different from all the other wines that are on the market?
I think what makes us different is the whole package that we deliver on. We have great wines. We co-create with Rob Mondavi Jr., who helps us on the winemaking side. Wonderful wines from some of the best regions in California, including Sonoma, Napa, the Central Coast. But also with every different varietal that we have, every different type of wine, whether it be a Cabernet, a Merlot, a sparkling, we make a measurable impact. So, for instance, every case of our champagne is funding 25 meals for children fighting hunger, or every bottle of Merlot funds a life-saving vaccine for a child in an underdeveloped nation. And then, you know, we have our Pinot for Paws, of course. Every case of our Pinot funds a pet adoption, and on and on. So we have, you know, over 100 products that we sell. About half of them are wine, and each different product goes towards a different cause. And we work with great charitable partners. So that really differentiates us in a major way, in addition to delivering on great wine, great packaging, and having a really wonderful community that we've built around our brand.
All right. So many different ways to take, you know, your response in terms of the mission and the charities. We're going to get to all that. But I want to rewind for a second, because I introduced you as the CEO and the founder of One Hope Wine. How in the world do you become the guy that runs basically, essentially a winery is really what it comes down to, where you guys are sourcing out the grapes. You're working with different vineyards. You mentioned Mondavi, which is sort of like an industry standard. I mean, just a huge name in wine. But how do you even get started on a wine company?
Yeah, well, my start was probably different than most. A lot of people start into wine is because their family has been in it for decades or centuries. And so a lot of the people you meet who have owned the iconic brands throughout Napa and really the world come from a long lineage of winemaking. I did not. I grew up in the Bay Area in Fremont, California, and found myself at UC Berkeley, where I did play a little bit of sports, not nearly as just impressive of an athletic career as most of your guests have had, but nonetheless did some sports at Cal and left to start my first job with the largest wine company in the world, Gallo, and was very fortunate to get trained on wine and how to market wine and talk about wine and sell wine with them, because I really to this day believe they're the best at it in the entire industry and the industry standard. And about a year into working there, I had the idea for One Hope to create what I at the time would refer to as the adult version of Girl Scout cookies, a product where you could buy it year round and make an impact and help out your local troop and support entrepreneurship and all these great things that went with it. And the only problem was that I didn't own a winery and I didn't have a winemaker and I didn't know how to make wine myself. So I ultimately did really nothing with that idea until a very good girlfriend of mine who lived next door to me all throughout growing up called me one day and told me that she had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma cancer, so blood cancer. And that was really a life-changing moment for me. It was my first time that I had a peer and a close friend of mine go through something like that. And so I flew home to see her the next day and I told her that, hey, I've had this great idea and I'm going to start it while you're going through this whole process of the chemo and the radiation and everything. And we're going to keep each other up to date on it. And so I went out, I found a winemaker. The next day, I was 23, just going on 24 at the time. Got a winemaker to make the first 168 cases of wine, picked it up in Sonoma, which is where we were making our wine in the very beginning, drove it down in a U-Haul truck to Los Angeles and loaded up in a public storage unit and started selling out of the back of my car with a handful of other people who joined me from Gallo and who are recognized as my co-founders to this day.
Wow. How do you even get a winemaker to go and produce the wine? Is that something anyone can do?
It wasn't as much when I went to go do it. I went to a larger winery and I got introduced through the management team there to their winemaker, David Elliott at the time, who was our first winemaker. And he, made great wines like Clos de Bois and Lancaster Estate and other recognizable brands. And they were willing to get behind it because they liked the idea. And so they peeled off, some Chardonnay, some Cabernet, and some Merlot, and let me label it up and use it. And now today they have a pretty big private label program and they help other brands who are just getting started. But at the time they didn't have, a private label program. So similarly, when we got the opportunity and I met Michael Mondavi and he ultimately introduced me to his son, Rob Mondavi Jr., the grandson of the great Robert Mondavi. They believed in our vision too. And by that time we were a little bigger, we were doing about 5,000 cases a year. And they said, if you need help scaling the size of your brand and the quality of your wine, we'd be interested in helping you. And that was such a big moment for us. I mean, I felt at that time like we had arrived, And I think every few years we have a turning point like that where we feel like, okay, now we really arrived. And that was definitely one of them. But both our first winemaker and that winemaking relationship was necessary to grow to the point where we're at, where we have, Rob Mondavi Jr. helping us make wine, Tony Coltrane, who's very famous and respected winemaker, has helped Robert Mondavi build his brands and Opus One on the winemaking side for many of the years for past decades. Getting to have those great winemakers work with us on creating our portfolio is really special when you think about where we came from and just 168 cases private labeled in a U-Haul truck.
Yeah. And look, I mean, you said that there are these moments where you feel like, hey, we've arrived. And I think maybe some of those moments when Chris Paul and Clayton Kershaw and John Elway are associated with One Hope Wine, you got to feel that, like at that point, hey, you've made it. And I want to talk about the athletes in just a second here, but you make reference to these giants in the wine industry. And I am, look, I'm into it in the sense that I love heading up to Napa and Sonoma. You and I have talked about wines a little bit. You are far more educated on this subject than I am. But explain, because I think most people will realize, hey, if it's good wine, we're going to go and drink it. Everyone's palate is a little bit different. But when you mention some of the winemakers that you've worked with and sort of the business and how it's gotten off, you can't have success if the wine's not good. So can you give me some context and perspective on just how tasty the actual wine is itself?
Yeah, definitely. Well, since starting the business, we've won over 100 medals from everything from national tasting competitions to local festivals, things like that. I think we have somewhere between 140 and 150 accolades there. We've got multiple 90-plus point ratings in respected publications such as Wine Enthusiast, Wine Spectator, The Tasting Panel. And it's really a big part of our success is people will try our wine for the first time because they hear about it at a charity event or a famous athlete or musician's event, and they hear the brand and they like it. But the reason why they come back and they buy it for a second time or they buy a case is because the wine inside is really good. And so we've always focused on both aspects of it, and that we really can't serve the community and make a social impact like we want to and at the scale we want unless our wine's really exceptional. And so we put a lot of focus from everything from, the vineyard relationships and what vineyards we're sourcing grapes from and the soils and microclimates and sun and water that are the variables that make great grapes. And then we've also put a huge focus on the winemaking side and the details around the barrel regimes that we use and how much oak we use. And we're really, like I said, fortunate that we have some great leaders in the industry that have decided that they want to partner with us and put their name behind our brand and associate it with our brand. So you get these juggernaut people that I had heard about for years and always respected from afar, but never really pictured, them being the people making our wine and putting their name on the back of our bottle and their signature on it. And all for a really great and meaningful cause on top of it, which is just the icing on the cake.
Yeah, the charity is just, like you said, I mean, that's the best way to describe it. Icing on the cake. There's so many great causes. It's not just one. You guys really are able to make an impact on a lot of different levels. I brought up John Elway's name, Clayton Kershaw, and Chris Paul. How do you get linked up with athletes at that caliber to put their name on your bottles?
Well, so Chris Paul and Clayton Kershaw are just great examples of our wine making its way into the right events. Those guys are both such, class act athletes. Outside of being best in class, they're just class act. And so we look for that combination. And what's funny is usually that combination is attracted to us as well. They like what we're doing. Certain guys tend to be like wine and because it is an art and they're interested in it because it is such a part of a lifestyle and a way of life. And a lot of good business people find themselves around wine. So there's all these things that tend to attract some of the most, successful business people on top of being the great athletes. And there is a difference there, and what I'm really proud of the fact that, John is not only associated with us and we helped him develop his brand, which is his own separate brand, called Seven Cellars, and it's his own label. We also have done One Hope Signature Series labels for great athletes like Chris Paul and Clayton Kershaw. And the the quality of the wine that we get in the bottle and associate with their name does them, you know, the respect that they're that they deserve as far as anything they put their brand on. And so getting introduced to those people, I think, has really happened organically. Each of them has happened in its own different way. I got introduced to John through Ronnie Lott, who's been a great business partner and advisor, and I know he's been on the show with you. I listened to that podcast. And we got introduced to Chris Paul and Clayton Kershaw's team through additional introductions. We, Aaron Rodgers is also a big partner in One Hope, and we're really thankful to have him as an early investor. Aaron played at Cal, and I played football at Cal, and so did our chief marketing officer, Brandon Hall. And so that's kind of the way that that connection was made. And I ultimately ended up playing rugby there as my main sport. But Brandon was a stud tight end during the days that Aaron was that we were lucky enough to have Aaron there for a while. And so all of these connections happen through, you know, personal relationships, and because somebody vouched for us as being good people and the right people behind the brand. And, you know, your reputation lines up after they hear about this really cool concept that they can have their own wine, not have to jump fully into the business and buy their own vineyard and their own winery, but be able to make their own small production wine and serve a really good cause that they care about. And so you see Chris and Clayton all serving their foundation's goals, and usually having to do with helping kids and children and empowering them a lot. And it's a nice thing to be able to do.
Jake, who has of the athletes, and you mentioned, I mean, it's a who's list of guys that have been associated with One Hope Wine. Who's got the sophisticated palate? Who's really that wine guy?
Oh, man, you're putting me on the spot there, huh? I would actually say Chris Paul is probably the biggest fan of wine. You can tell he really just loves it and is passionate about it. The first time Chris and I were drinking a glass of his wine at his fundraiser that he does in Vegas each year, you could just tell that there was that extra passion around the wine in the glass. But it is really one of those things where all of these guys, when their names on something, like, it's special to them, and they, yeah, and it needs to be, you know? And so I would say from a pure wine knowledge standpoint, he's definitely up there, you know?
I want to get circle back, Jake, because you make reference to the guys that want to be associated with the mission and what you guys are doing from a charity standpoint. I think anyone who's listening right now understands that the wine industry is a huge business. I mean, people can make large sums of money, and yet you guys, from a charitable standpoint, are giving so much away. How much, like, is there a percentage that, how, like, an equation that you guys use to figure out, hey, like, what's profit so we can continue to manufacture and make sure that this goes out there, not to mention also help? Because the numbers are staggering when I look at the impact that you guys have had when it comes to cancer, when it comes to obviously pets, not to mention children and feeding them. I mean, the numbers are extraordinary.
Yep. Thank you, first of all. I would say that, you know, our commitment has always been that long term. As a brand, we'll donate half of our profits to partner nonprofits. We really have focused more on the actual impact that we're making rather than the percentage of profits or percentage of revenue or certain dollars amounts, because it's really about what those dollars and those percentages turn into as far as the impact. So one of the big things that we're committed to as a brand is always quantifying that impact so that our supporters and consumers and retailers and partners, like the people who help make our wine and our vineyard partners, can understand just the exact impact they're making. So instead of talking about how many millions of dollars we've donated, our real focus is around the fact that we've provided over 2,800 clinical trials for cancer patients, or that we've provided over 15,000 forever homes for shelter animals, and funded over 1.1 million meals for children. And, 9,000 people have been provided clean drinking water from our clean drinking water projects throughout the rest of the world. Those are all the important statistics that we want to educate our consumer and our supporters on is how their purchase is impacting a person's life rather than, a dollar figure and a percentage. But as a business, over the past years, we have always had a pretty significant commitment around our model for donating. Because wine brands in the early stages aren't significantly profitable, even though our commitment was to donate over half our profits, we were always donating, more than that because we weren't making a profit. So we, from the beginning, we've really built it into our cost of goods and our cost of business and just into our overall business model in general. So now, no matter how the business does and how it grows over the years, we want people to know that for every case of our sparkling wine, we're committed to donating 25 meals. And that's the most easy to understand statement, and it's the most transparent one, and that's what we want to provide to our customers and supporters.
Yeah, you made reference to Ronnie Lott, who was actually my first guest on this podcast in the last couple of weeks. I've been spending time with him, obviously, in the thick of things here at the Pac-12 Network with regard to football, and he's one of the icons that have played in the industry. And I know Ronnie does so much charitable, things with helping kids. And, you made reference to the clinical trials where for cancer patients, the meals for children, the drinking water as well. You said you want to put a dollar figure on it, but I think people understand that's not cheap. I mean, it is millions, plural, of money that's going to help out a lot of these causes, which leads me to my next question. How do you pick out what cause you guys want to go and support?
Yeah, it's a great question. And by the way, just to note the fact that you've had Heisman Trophy winner Matt Leinart and, one of the best players of all time, Ronnie Lott, on to represent the USC football program, and then you brought in that backup middle linebacker from one of our worser eras of Cal football to represent Cal football. Just to neutralize me, you're going to have to get like Aaron Rodgers or Marshawn Lynch or one of the best of all time out of the school in the league to make up for me.
Look, Jake, let's not underplay because you are a titan when it comes to business. And look, if you want to help facilitate Aaron Rodgers on the show, I am not going to say no to a guy of his caliber. So if he wants to promote the wines, I'd be more than happy to have him on the show. But you're right. Look, the Pac-12 ties, this is what we're learning here, Jake. The Pac-12 ties are thick, not only on the sports world, but on the business side as well.
Yep, definitely. I'll pull us back over to what your question was. Is around our standard. I just wanted to make sure I plugged my Cal Bears real quickly.
And, Bears. Sonny Dykes.
It would be a lot of fun. Yeah, definitely. It'd be fun to get Aaron on here. So we'll see if we can make that happen. The standard around our charitable giving is actually one of the really important pieces of intellectual property, if you will, that we built out. So we have a 15-point standard that every nonprofit goes through. It's kind of a vetting process, and we've had thousands of nonprofits apply to be up on our platform. And it really ranges from, are they a 501c3? How many cents on the dollar are making it to the actual program? Have they been in business for 3 years? Because 90% of nonprofits actually fold in the first few years. And so those are all kind of basic standards. And then it goes all the way to like our most unique, which is how many cents on the or what is the dollar to impact ratio? So how much does $100 do for this organization? And we want nonprofits where we can quantify that. We can quantify that, X amount of dollars funds a clinical trial, X amount of dollars helps provide a forever home for a shelter animal. When we can do that, we know that it kind of works with a consumer product and a consumer service where people really want to be able to connect and understand what their purchase is doing, and more than just a general line of a percentage of proceeds from this purchase is going here. We've realized that consumers want more than that. They want to be more connected to the end impact. And so our 15-point standard is built around finding nonprofits that not only hit really great standards and run efficiently, but also can have that extra layer. And because of that, we've had lots of businesses who have come to us and said, hey, we want to give back as well. We want to include this in our everyday business model. Can you help us? And so that whole piece of education and that whole platform is held under something we call Honeycomb. And Honeycomb has over 30 businesses that are currently partners in it. And One Hope is the largest partner so far, but there are more joining kind of every week. And Honeycomb is about building this hive of businesses, and the businesses are the bees. And then we also have a big field of flowers. And so we have over 500 nonprofits that have made it through our vetting, our specific vetting standard. And we want, you know, the bees to pollinate those flowers. And we loved that metaphor, the kind of that sustainable circle of life of bees pollinating flowers and creating honey. And the honey is the social impact that's made when the bees and flowers come together and the pollination occurs. And so we talk about Honeycomb as making the world a sweeter place. And we've got over 30 businesses in it, and they're over 500 nonprofits. And over time, I think there will be more and more businesses that are wanting to participate in this. And you really start to create this community, and you create network effects where the next business who comes on board gets to tap the infrastructure that all the rest of the businesses have built together, and really create a co-op around making an impact and being a cause-centric business. So that's probably a little more of a thorough answer than you were anticipating, but it's a really big part of our future vision with One Hope and where we want to take this, which is beyond just what our company is able to do, and more so being a supporter and a platform for this movement of cause-centric commerce.
Yeah, you know, you just mentioned sort of that next step for One Hope Wine, and I'm curious because I get people, visitors, family, friends, they're coming out to the West Coast, they're coming out to the Bay Area, and everyone that I'm friends with sort of knows that I love wine country. I head up there probably at least once a month, maybe more when it's not football season, and they're always asking for recommendations and suggestions, and I know you guys are actually, this is mind-boggling. We met months ago, and you were telling me about, you know, the winery that you guys are actually building. It's still in the process of being built, so I can't wait to tell people to head to where you guys are going to be in Napa. But what's this process like as you try to set up shop and create a home for what you guys do?
It's been pretty amazing. I'm actually sitting out on the vineyard right now doing the call with you, and I am looking at the estate that we're building on there, which is you know, a big home. 8 master suites in it for, you know, a big family that is around the One Hope brand. And we, you know, big chef's kitchen and communal areas and pool and really doing it right. And it sits amongst this beautiful vineyard that's right on St. Helena Highway, the main highway drag, right after you pass Robert Mondavi and Opus One. It's kind of the next, it's going to be the next winery property on your left. It's about a half a mile down from Robert Mondavi as you're heading north on St. Helena Highway. We're right across from our neighbors, Cape Bread Winery, right next door to Tokalon Vineyard. So really sitting amongst the mecca of the Napa Valley wine industry, and really the wine industry in general in the U.S., which, as you noted, is actually a massive market, over $40 billion industry. And we are in the AVA of Napa, referred to as Rutherford, which, you know, is well known because of brands like Camus and Cake Bread and groups like that who have created some of the greatest wines. And we're west of Highway 29, which is kind of even more discussed as having the best soils in the whole valley and stuff. So we are building the house right now. We've been going through the permitting phases of the winery. We have our winery permit. We're looking forward to breaking ground there as well. And really targeting completion of the home by Q3 of next year, and then opening of the winery in Q1 of 2018, which seems like a long ways away, but we're actually more than halfway through the project. So this has been 2 years in the making so far, and we're another year and a half away from completing it. In the meantime, one of the really cool things that we're doing at One Hope, and probably becoming one of the biggest stories, is trying to democratize that Napa Valley wine tasting experience. So if you're one of the many people who can't make it out to Napa very often because you don't live in Northern California, and or you just don't have the budget to spend, you know, $1,000 plus to come out and do the full wine tasting experience and stay at an expensive hotel and all of those things, then we've created this community that we refer to as BO1 Hope. And the idea is to be able to experience the Napa Valley VO1 Hope, but not necessarily in Napa, but via your at-home party, via your business, via your wedding, any type of charity events, etc. And so we have this huge community, almost 1,000 now, people that we refer to as cause entrepreneurs. So they're cause entrepreneurs, BO1 Hope, and we call them CEOs, which is their acronym for cause entrepreneur, BO1 Hope. And basically educate all these people on how to hold a wine tasting event, how to talk about wines, how to educate people on them. And they learn our whole portfolio of wines, which range from, you know, about 15 selections that are under $20 to our highest end wines that are over $100 and just mega wines. And we're having events all across the nation. You know, we've had thousands of events this year through that community. And they're spreading the story about One Hope. They're helping to raise money for their local causes of choice. And they're bringing the Napa Valley wine experience into the comfort of people's homes. And it's a really, really cool phenomenon. And it's become kind of the biggest story for One Hope. And really one of the biggest differentiators for us is that we have this big army of cause entrepreneurs who are having people host events and raising money for their breast cancer walk or their kids' school. And it's been really cool to watch that grow as well.
An insane story. Jake, really, I can't thank you enough for spending some time with us. Yeah, obviously, the mission of what you guys do, and you mentioned some of the programs and some of the charities that are really just benefiting from what you guys are doing. More information, onehopewine.com. Jake, I can't wait. I hope I get an invite to the party here. I mean, I'm ready. 2-1-18. I'm ready for it. Let's get it going.
Yammer, you are on the list, man, and you will definitely get an invite when we do this first opening party. And I'm sure John will invite you too, because he's a partner in the vineyard as well. So his brand will be featured here in the winery. So between the two of us, we'll make sure that we extend you an invite on behalf of One Hope Wine and Seven Cellars. And I'm looking forward to hearing some of your upcoming acts, and hopefully a couple of guys who are affiliated with our brand will jump on the line with you as well and tell you about their story.
Yeah, we'll get them on the show for sure. I have a feeling, Jake, I might have to rely on you for that invite, and John Elway might be slightly busy. Maybe he's already forgotten a couple of the interactions that we've had. So I'm picking on you for that. But in all seriousness, an absolute fantastic cause. It's great wine. I actually had it at the event when I met Jake. It's onehopewine.com. If you're a giver and you want to, you know, help out a lot of these great causes when it comes to kids, when it comes to cancer treatment, not to mention shelters for pets as well. Jake, once again, thank you so much for the time. Best of luck to you guys over the next few months and obviously the next few years.
Thanks a lot, pal. Have a great one.
I really appreciate Jake stopping by with us, and I know I mentioned this off the top of the show. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you guys are enjoying these shows, and remember, they're all evergreen. You can check in on any of the shows from the past, and I know Jake made reference to Matt Leiner and Ronnie Lott. Well, Jake Plummer was also a guest a couple weeks ago, and obviously basketball season, so the last few weeks have been fluttered with some basketball guests, but it's been a ton of fun to do these shows. The numbers continue to climb, and I can't thank you guys enough for sharing it with your friends. Continue to do so. You can rate, subscribe, and review the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, TuneIn, wherever you're finding the episodes. Make sure you subscribe and continue to share it. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it.